You're listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. The views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au. Richard to come forward and read one of the best known passages from the film The Matrix as the wise Morpheus speaks to the hero Neo.
I'll try to put in my best Lawrence Fishburne voice. He was the actor that played Morpheus. This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill, the story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to. You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. Remember, all I'm offering is the truth, nothing more.
If you had the shiny round glasses on, I would have thought it was Lawrence Fishburne. So, this week, as I have done once before, but it's worth revisiting. So it's really The Matrix Revisited. Yeah, I heard that before too. Back in 1999, there was this film from Hollywood called The Matrix. And it was successful enough that two sequels were made, so it must have been commercially successful. And there was a fair bit of violence in it, but I'm leaving that to one side. I take it as a modern myth. A little bit about the story, for those of you who don't know. The story is premised on the proliferation of AI, artificial intelligence, what you might call robots across the earth. And the AI develops its own project of domination to make human beings subservient. Humans become so desperate that they trigger nuclear explosions, hoping that the cloud enveloping the Earth will starve the robots of the solar energy they need for power. But the robots adapt to the situation, and they place almost all human beings on life support systems in vats, so that they can feed from the electric currents running through their human bodies. The humans don't complain, however, because the program transmits virtual reality into their brain, whereby they can experience all of the things we take for granted every day. A house, shopping, walk in the park, everything. But a hero is freed from the Matrix and taken aboard a spaceship which represents unfettered true reality. And in this respect, it's a story like so many before in the mythology of cultures around the world and in film and novels of the past, going back through The Wizard of Oz, right back to Plato, in terms of the hero going through some dangerous transition, some initiation of some sort, going through a portal of some sort, learning, gaining in wisdom, and then returning at that higher level. So on board there's a wise man by the name of Morpheus, and the name is ironic, I think, since it's also the name of the Roman god of sleep. And yet this individual is one of the few human beings who is really awake. Morpheus explains the scenario to the hero in the following terms. Let me tell you why you're here. You know something. What you know, you can't explain, but you feel it. You've felt it your entire life. There's something wrong with the world. You don't know what, but it's there, like a splinter in your mind, driving you mad. It is this feeling that has brought you to me. Do you know what I'm talking about? The Matrix. Do you want to know what it is? The Matrix is everywhere. It's all around us. Even now, in this very room. You can see it when you look out your window or when you turn on your television. You can feel it when you go to work, when you go to church, when you pay your taxes. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth. The truth that you are a slave. Like everyone else, you were born into bondage, born into a prison that you cannot smell or taste or touch. A prison for your mind. Which reminds me of the Martin Scorsese film, The Last Temptation of Christ, when the hero has a choice between complacency or bold sacrifice. In the film The Matrix, Morpheus gives the hero a choice. He says, "Unfortunately, no one can be told what the Matrix is. You have to see it for yourself. This is your last chance." And so we had the reading from Richard, the choice of taking the blue pill or the red pill, of staying as you are or embarking on a somewhat risky, dangerous voyage of discovery. Morpheus instructs the hero, "Sooner or later, you're going to realize, just as I did, there's a difference between knowing the path and walking the path." And it's an unfortunate truth for everyone who approaches spiritual growth with only the intellect. It can only take you so far. After appropriate training, the hero descends into the computer program, which is deceiving the vast majority of captive humanity. He's opposed by agents which operate in the same way that our antivirus computer software might detect and disable a computer virus on our home computer. The agents come across as evil, but really, they're just carrying out a function objectively to ensure that there's no interference to the running of the program. Many of the characters are instructive archetypes. One of the most valuable experiences our hero has is a meeting with a character called the Oracle, in the tradition of wisdom personified, known to the ancient Greeks and the Gnostics as Sophia. After many challenges and casualties, the hero not only survives, but comes to understand himself, his mission, and the nature of the Matrix. It would be too much to call it a happy ending, but there's some hope for humanity at the end of it. The Matrix explores the nature of reality itself. Another of the characters, Merovingian, is a determinist. He sees everything that happens, even the choices made by apparently free human beings, as predetermined, because they always arise from a combination of prior factors and causes. As he puts it, "Soon the why and the reason are gone, and all that matters is the feeling itself. This is the nature of the universe. We struggle against it, we fight to deny it, but it is, of course, pretense. It is a lie. Beneath our poised appearance, the truth is we are completely out of control. Causality. There is no escape from it. We are forever slaves to it. Our only hope, our only peace, is to understand it, to understand the why. Why is what separates us from them, from you, from me. Why is the only real source of power. Without it, you are powerless. And this is how you came to me. Without Wi-Fi, without power, another link in the chain." To which the human spirit of most of us says, "No!" Another character in the Matrix is simply known as the architect. The one who wrote the computer program which is fed into the brains of the bulk of humanity. And my own tagline there, the creator almost no one knows about. But this concept, this myth, is comparable to the beliefs of the Gnostics of some 2,000 years ago, thinking that there was a creator, not the supreme being, but powerful enough to create this earth and the motivations in it. And yet the Matrix is also akin to Buddhist philosophy in a way, in the sense that it portrays this experience we have on earth as a world of illusion, samsara in the Hindi. And the idea is to understand exactly what is happening so that one can be free of it, which is indeed a core message of the Matrix. But it also has a number of Christian connections as well. It is interesting that the name of the hero before he is transported beyond his captive reality is Thomas Anderson. Now, you might think that's unexceptional, but I can't help but thinking it might be deliberate. Anderson, Ander comes from Anthropos, man in Greek. So is this the son of man? And why Thomas? Thomas being the most mystic of the early Christian works that survive. It's also interesting that there's a female character, the heroine in a sense, whose name is Trinity. And when our hero, who adopts the name Neo, which of course is an anagram of one, as in the one, when he encounters Trinity, he says, "Oh, Jesus, I thought you were a man." And she says, "Most men do." So, yeah, something to think about. So the hero of the story possesses unique insight and abilities and literally descends into the world in order to save humanity. Sounds familiar? Let's hear some more music from Robin. Which our hero is descending is not the world of all things bright and beautiful, which we sometimes sing about and celebrate. It's a world of illusion. The concept is not so unexceptional in Buddhism or Gnosticism or to the Sufis of Islamic tradition. In each of these alternatives to Christianity, there is the prospect of exceptional human beings willing to face the challenges of saving humanity, even if humanity doesn't realize it needs saving. Not that this concept is foreign to the Western philosophical tradition. And so I take a moment to revisit the story, the myth, if you like, of Plato's cave, described in Book 7 of his work, The Republic. Indeed, it may have been from the Greek philosophers that the Gnostics, who rivaled Orthodox Christianity for several hundred years in the Eastern Mediterranean world, may have derived their concept of a secondary creator god, which would help to explain why there's so much pain and suffering in the world. Anyway, Plato described an audience of human beings manacled to their seats, watching a picture show in a cave. There's a fire burning behind the people, behind the wall, and between the fire and the back of the people, there are puppeteers, moving shapes which in turn project moving shadows onto the wall of the cave. Because the people are bound to their seats, they've only ever known the moving shadows, they believe that is what is indeed reality. Somehow, as Plato describes it, a philosopher breaks free from the chains and edges towards the entrance to the cave. Upon reaching the fire, the philosopher realizes the people are only watching a shadow play. But the philosopher even then has not comprehended reality. When the philosopher goes on to exit the cave, the eyes are blinded with the intense light of the real world outside. Valuing the prisoners in the cave as much as his own freedom and dignity, the philosopher returns to the cave to see if the people can be rescued. Not only does the returning philosopher struggle with the blackness of the interior of the cave, but the philosopher discovers the prisoners would rather kill someone bringing news of salvation than being distracted from the entertainment of the shadow play. They're not ready to suggest an alternative reality. Perhaps think about that in terms of the society around us. And yet, what is reality? As Morpheus challenges the hero in the Matrix film, how do you define real? If you're talking about what you can feel, what you can smell, taste, and see, then real is simply electrical signals interpreted by your brain. If Plato had known about computers, he may well have written the script of The Matrix. The essence of Platonic philosophy is that there is a world of ideation, a world of ideas of things, the ultimate reality, which merely manifests in the forms that we can sense. The concept of a split-level reality informed Christianity, Kabbalah, and Western esoteric traditions. So I'm not sure if you find the distinction between ideas and forms useful. As one of Woody Allen's characters says, "I'm not crazy about reality, but it's still the best place to get a decent steak." You will find, though, in many religions around the world, that there's an emphasis on detaching ourselves from the material and focusing on the spiritual, storing up our treasure in heaven, not on earth. Treading the spiritual path is not easy, of course. As Morpheus says in the Matrix film, "Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here before you now, truthfully, unafraid. Why? Because I believe in something you do not? No. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I'm here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lives behind me." Now, in case you're thinking that this movie script and the old Greek philosophy aren't for you, for those of a Christian heritage, I leave you with the words of Yeshua as reported in the book attributed to Luke, chapter 21, verses 34 to 36. "Watch yourselves, lest your heart be weighed down with dissipation and drunkenness and cares of this life, and that day comes upon you suddenly like a trap. For it will come upon all who dwell on the face of the whole earth. But stay awake at all times, praying that you may have strength to escape all these things that are going to take place." So it doesn't mean that we stop eating or working or paying our council rates. But the point is that as we go through this life, we make every effort to stay conscious, to be awake to the reality behind what we see. And each of us in our life and in the week ahead will have a choice between complacency and, on the other hand, bold and noble sacrifice. So let us choose love. We hope you've enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter. This permission can be obtained by emailing admin@unitarianSA.org.au. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians or by visiting our website at unitarianSA.org.au.